Hey, Dashiell.
What?
You want to listen to this?
Yeah.
Who's that guy?
I don't know.
What does he look like?
Brown and white.
My son Dashiell and I are sharing one of my favorite traditions for getting into the Christmas spirit. I happen to have a large collection of vinyl records for Christmas time. And while most of them are vintage albums from the likes of Perry Como and Julie Andrews, a good many are those old storybooks that came with an accompanying 7-inch record that narrated the book. The kind that would begin by telling you,
"You will know it is time to turn the page when you hear the chimes ring like this. Let's begin now."
I've had many of them since childhood, and I've added to my collection over the years. There's Mickey's Christmas Carol, The $6 Million Man Christmas Adventures, and How Lovely is Christmas, just to name a few. And then there are those that deliver that perfect mix of Christmas and 80s nostalgia, like The Pac-Man Christmas Story, Care Bears 12 Days of Christmas, and Strawberry Shortcake's A Berry Merry Christmas. But today, we're getting into a festive and 80s state of mind with one of the most weird and wild, merry and monstrous stories of them all. The Gift of the Mogwai is the first in a 5-book and record set telling the story of the 1984 movie Gremlins. And yep, I have the whole set. There's also Gizmo and the Gremlins, Escape from the Gremlins, Gremlins Trapped, and The Last Gremlin. And seeing as how Dash is only 4 years old, this version of the Gremlin story is the only one suitable for him to experience for the moment. It's funny because on the back of each of the 5 books, it says, "This book is based on the film Gremlins, rated PG. Parental guidance suggested." Gremlins was more than just a movie that combined horror, comedy, gory violence, and Christmas. It was also a massive merchandising and product placement juggernaut, a pop culture phenomenon, and one of the last movies of its kind to be rated PG. So,
let's begin now.
I'm Brian Earle. This is Christmas Past. It was 40 years ago this year that Gremlins was released. In the story, a dad named Randall visits a Chinatown antique shop to find a Christmas gift for his son Billy. There, he sees a small furry creature called a Mogwai, but the owner refuses to sell it. But the shop owner's grandson secretly makes the sale, and he warns Randall of 3 unbreakable rules for caring for a Mogwai. Never expose it to light, especially sunlight, as it can be fatal. Avoid getting it wet. And, most importantly, never feed it after midnight. Of course, all of those things happen and madness ensues. Exposure to water causes the Mogwai to multiply, and feeding them after midnight causes them to transform into violent and mischievous gremlins. People debate, maybe not as vigorously as they do about Die Hard, another Christmas movie, whether Gremlins is a Christmas movie.
Oh, come on.
That's Alonzo Duraldi, film critic, podcaster, and author of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, and most recently, Hollywood Pride.
Gremlins is not just set during Christmas, but like Christmas is baked into it. The whole reason that Billy's father gets the Mogwai in the first place is because he needs a Christmas present. So much of this movie is very specifically tied to Christmas, and I don't think you could set this movie at any other time of year.
But still, the movie was released in June of 1984, and it was out of theaters by the end of November. That used to be a common thing, actually. Miracle on 34th Street came out in June of 1947, simply because summer is when more people go to the movies. Nowadays, it would be hard to imagine a Christmas-themed movie releasing in the summer. And speaking of old Christmas movies,
Joe Dante even said that he envisioned this as basically a monster movie unfolding within It's a Wonderful Life.
Joe Dante being the director, in a movie executive produced by Steven Spielberg and written by Christmas royalty.
It's written by none other than Chris Columbus, who would go on to give us Home Alone and the Christmas Chronicles movies.
So now getting back to the story, the family has named the cute fuzzy Mogwai Gizmo, a character for whom Howie Mandel provided the voice. And it isn't long before Billy's friend Pete, played by a young Corey Feldman, spills water on Gizmo, spawning a new litter of Mogwai, these ones more rambunctious than the docile Gizmo, and led by a Mogwai named Stripe. These new Mogwai sabotage a clock to trick Billy into feeding them after midnight, transforming them into green, scaly gremlins. And from here on, it's chaos, with Billy and his mother killing the gremlins, while the gremlins take over the town in a spree of murderous mayhem. In one especially gruesome scene, Billy's mother kills a gremlin in a blender. So now, wait a second. Let's get back to a couple of things. This is a Christmas movie? And a PG movie? Well, like I said before, Gremlins was among the last movies of its kind to receive a PG rating.
Part of the infamy of Gremlins is that it and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom both came out at around the same time. Both rated PG, both with the sort of Steven Spielberg, you know, seal of approval, and both causing a lot of parents to freak out because their kids were freaked out by the disturbing imagery therein. And by the end of the summer of 1984, we had the PG-13 rating. But they were gung-ho about aiming this at children as a PG movie.
This created an interesting dynamic, because like any popular 80s children characters, Gremlins got its own world of merchandising. Bedsheet sets, plush dolls, trading cards, a breakfast cereal, lunchboxes, a Furby, even a video game for the Atari 2600.
The marketing suggested, oh, look, the Mogwai, they're so adorable. And oh, it's Steven Spielberg Presents. And oh, this all sounds lovely. And then suddenly you've got like a scaly thing in a blender and people are like, what? I didn't sign up for this.
Well, again, getting back to the story, Stripe, the leader of the Gremlins, escaping his pursuers, jumps into a swimming pool, spawning an army of rampaging Gremlins. Billy rescues his girlfriend, Kate, played by 80s icon Phoebe Cates, and the two soon discover the Gremlin army has taken over the local movie theater where they are watching Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
The fact that Disney let them use Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, I think, is a pretty big deal. They were not known for loaning their stuff out to other studios, and especially not in a context where like it's being enjoyed by a bunch of psychotic, creepy, crawly monsters.
Billy and Kate kill most of the remaining gremlins with an explosion, but Stripe escapes. It's Gizmo who finally saves the day, exposing Stripe to direct sunlight, killing him, and ending the mayhem. It was a delirious mix of horror and comedy, the likes of which we don't see much anymore. But Gremlins fit right in back in 1984. After all, it was released on the very same day as another movie fitting the same bill, Ghostbusters. And in addition to that very 80s casting you had with Phoebe Cates and Corey Feldman, you also have Judge Reinhold. But the casting also tipped its hat to earlier decades.
It's also worth noting that, you know, Joe Dante, very much a fan of old, you know, B-movies, drive-in movies, that kind of thing. And so you get a lot of great cameos in this movie, whether it's Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet, who pops up early on, Dick Miller, who plays Mr. Futterman, you know, a staple from the Roger Corman movies, like, you know, Bucket of Blood. Kevin McCarthy pops up briefly from Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So, like, he's definitely paying a lot of homage to the creature features of the past that inspired this movie.
After the success of the 1984 original, the sequel, Gremlins 2 The New Batch, arrived in 1990.
I am a huge fan of Gremlins 2 The New Batch, even though it is not a Christmas movie. It is a sequel that dares to make fun of the predecessor.
And Gremlins Secret of the Mogwai is a new animated series, and also not at all Christmassy, that debuted in 2022 on the Max streaming service. With an all-star voice cast including George Takei, Sandra Oh, Bowen Yang, James Hong, and Zach Galligan, who played Billy in the 1984 original. And speaking of that 1984 original, what are we to make of it? There had never been another movie like it, nor has there been one since. Why?
Pretty much your Christmas horror tends to be of the R-rated, you know, Black Christmas, Silent Night, Deadly Night variety. Stuff that's aimed at kids is usually more safely in the comedy, maybe action-adventure genre. This is definitely a melding of the subgenres that is pretty unique. It's one of those we come this way but once, because this movie was a huge hit, but at the same time, I think so many parents were so upset about taking their kids to this movie and then discovering that it was not exactly what they had been sold that I don't think it was going to inspire a lot of other people to make movies along those lines.
Well, hey, you know what else you're not supposed to do after midnight? Catch a glimpse of Santa Claus on Christmas Eve. But that hasn't stopped generations of children whose Christmas spirit and curiosity have gotten the better of them. Just ask Sheila in Maryland.
One of my Christmas memories is from when I was about 10 or 11 years old. My sister was 2 years younger than me. Well, that Christmas Eve, I told her I was going to hide underneath the train garden my dad put up every year and wait for Santa. When our parents sent us to bed, I waited about 10 minutes before I snuck out of bed. went downstairs, and crawled under the platform. My dad would always staple a decorative brick paper onto the edge of the platform garden to hide all the empty boxes he stored underneath. I thought that would be the perfect place to wait for Santa. Well, I bet I wasn't under there 5 minutes when my dad lifted the paper and found me. He didn't scold me, he just told me Santa would not come until all little girls were in bed. He was right, because sure enough, we awoke to find that Santa did indeed come to our house. I'm now 68 years young, and I still believe in the magic of Christmas. Merry Christmas, everyone.
We're less than 2 weeks away from Christmas, but there's still time to share a memory in an upcoming episode. Just record yourself speaking into your phone's voice memo app and send it to christmaspastpodcast@gmail.com. Keep it reasonably short, clean, and family-friendly, and be sure to say your name and where you're from. We're right at about the halfway point of this 2024 Christmas season. I hope yours has been wonderful so far, and I'm looking forward to spending the rest of it with you. I'll see you again soon, and until then, I'll tell you that Christmas Past is produced in wonderful Willow Glen, California, by yours truly, Brian Earle. Thank you so much to Alonzo Duraldi. Check the show notes to this episode for links to Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas and Hollywood Pride. Thanks to Sheila and Maryland, and as always, thank you. You can drop me a line anytime, and I always love to hear from you. Again, I'm at christmaspastpodcast@gmail.com, or you can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And join our private Christmas Past Facebook group if you haven't yet. And hey, if you're really feeling the Christmas spirit, why not help more people discover the show? It's as simple as telling a friend about it or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. If you do leave a review, I'll send you a Christmas Past sticker, and a handwritten Christmas card is my way of saying thanks. Reach out for details. And until we meet again, may your days be merry and bright.